Okay, so because we have people who may not have come on the previous day, I'm going to just start slightly early and then review just very, very briefly what we talked about last time, and then go on to the new stuff when we hit, what is it, 8 o'clock? 9 o'clock? 9 o'clock. Okay. So last time we talked a lot about atoms, right? So I think the key point to take away from all that stuff is that first, you probably already saw this in high school. So hopefully this is not too new. The other thing I want you guys to remember is properties of water. Okay, so why water is important and how it gives rise to life on Earth. And in particular, as I talked about last time, hydrogen bonding, which is this polar-to-polar interaction because of the differences in the electronegativities in the oxygen and the hydrogen. So basically, it's a partial charge, as I talked to you about earlier, because the oxygen wanted that two extra electrons, so it grabbed two extra electrons away from the hydrogen, but only partially, not completely. Right? These are covalent bonds. These are actually, you call them polar covalent bonds. But because of that, you have a partial charge on the hydrogen that's slightly positive, partial charge on the oxygen that's slightly negative, and these bonds are now going to interact with each other. So that's as far really as you need to know. Does that make sense, by the way? Or if it doesn't make complete sense, it's okay. You can ask me afterwards, or you don't have to know like the specific mechanistic thing, but you should know is that you have partial charges in the water, and that allows you to have interaction, and opposite charges attract. Yeah, so therefore, you have these interactions which are called hydrogen bonds. But because of the hydrogen bond, you have these molecules that now form this sort of lattice-like structure. This partial, it's okay, partial positive charge interacting with the partial negative charge of the next water. So you have this lattice that kind of forms. And because of this, though, it gives certain water certain properties, such as, you know, for example, I talked about last time how it can absorb heat very readily. So actually what we say is that it has high heat capacity. High heat capacity means that you can pump a lot of heat into liquid water, and water will still stay liquid, right? So that's why when you put it on the stove and you boil water, it takes some time, right? Because you have to pump a lot of heat until the water actually evaporates. That doesn't occur for all molecules, but for water it does. So water has high heat capacity, which means it's able to absorb heat, and also it's able to release heat when you know the environment gets colder. Yeah. Or sorry, high specific heat. But it's specific heat and heat capacity are kind of the same thing. So what I just said, you know, you can also say water has high specific heat. Again, meaning that it can absorb and release heat in a large temperature range. So it's able to absorb, in this case, absorb a lot of heat before it has to turn into gas. Okay, so and that's one of the reasons it allows it to have these properties. And we talked about last time how because it's kind of just a trick of the trade, sort of, but because water, it turns out the solid form of it is actually regular in this way, as opposed to this kind of irregular randomness in the liquid water. Because of that, it's one of the few substances where the solid form is less dense than the liquid form. And that's why you have water that floats on top, or ice that floats on top of water, as opposed to the other way around. Okay? And that allows you to have animals, for example, that survive under the water even in winter, right? So that was one of the key things we talked about. Okay, so anyways, I can't recap everything, but I think, you know, that's kind of more or less what we talked about. If you missed last time, just, you know, you just let me know if there's anything. There could be a few more things that could be important I don't remember on the top of my head right now. I have to look at the exam questions that I wrote for them. But if you did miss last time, just let me know, and then I'll try to, you know, tell you more about it. Okay. Okay. So again, water can dissolve pretty much anything, right? So anything that's polar, it will dissolve, right? Because, okay, polar meaning that it has like a little bit more positive on one end and a little bit more negative on the other end. Even if it's covalent, right? It will dissolve that because, you know, because hydrogen bonding, right? And if it's ionic, it definitely will dissolve that, right? Because if it's ionic, it'll just, I mean, these are big charges, it'll just like gobble it up, right? Just like the solid salt that I see. But it won't dissolve, for example, stuff that's like fats, for example, or lipids. That's why when you mix oil with water, they don't, you know, you have to stir, right? Because they don't actually dissolve well, right? Because, and the reason for that is that fats are just carbon. I'll talk about that later in this lecture. But the reason is because they are just flat. They don't have any charges on them, and they're just, they're not even polar. So the carbon and the hydrogen are sharing those electrons. So they just form a very regular structure that doesn't change. And so because of that, water won't be able to really get in between those nooks. So that's why you can say the fats will just stay as fats. Okay, so the other stuff we kind of talked about already, we did this calculation last time. If you don't know how to do it, look at my notes. I talked about this, but I didn't go into the details, but actually you don't have to know the details. I guess what you should know, just for your own knowledge, is that at pH 7, it just means it's neutral. It's not acidic or basic. And that's just because of the way to define it, which is using this log scale. And when we say that something is acidic, and I will use this fact in the future, but when we say it's acidic, it just has more free hydrogen, right? That's what it means. Because, look, if it's less than 7, then you look at this equation, right? So this is less than 7, negative log of that. That just means this hydrogen plus is going to be more because it's kind of negative. You don't have to know it. Sorry. This is too much information for you. All you have to know is if it's less than 7 pH, it's acidic, which means it has more free hydrogens. If it's basic, it has more free OHs. And OHs and hydrogens kind of balance out because of water, right? Because these guys coming together becomes water. And that's kind of an equilibrium process. So you always have these free hydrogens and or OHs, right? Meaning that when you have more free Hs, you have less OHs. And when you have less hydroxide OHs, you have more hydrogens. Okay, so that's how you define this acidic and basic. Acidic, again, more free hydrogens. Okay. So hopefully you remember that. I will kind of use that, you know, when I say something, oh, that's acidic, that just means it has more free hydrogens around, right? So the reactive properties would differ. Okay, again, not super important. I didn't talk about this, I guess, exactly last time. But again, this is something we already talked about before, about sharing of these electrons, right? Because remember that you can share these single bonds, right? Carbon, remember, has how many on the outer shell? 4, exactly. So if it has 4, it wants to get to 8. That's really all you have to know, is that things want to get to 8 or 2 or 0, right? So it's going to share 3 of those guys with the hydrogens. The hydrogen 2 each is going to be now full, and the carbon will also be full. And then it'll share, in this case, it'll share one more with another carbon. But if you notice that it will be stable even with more than 1, 2 carbons, right? You could just keep lengthening this, and it'll be like super stable, and these are covalent bonds, and these are don't mix well with water, right? Well, ethane's a gas, but you know, even if it's longer chain, it still won't mix with water well. But instead of that, of course, you can also do double bonds, right? So remember, the carbon has 4, right? So in this scenario, instead of sharing 1, 1, 1, 1, it would just do two double bonds. Okay? Two double bonds means that it's sharing both of those. So, in this case, it's actually sharing both of these guys with the oxygen next door, and the oxygen is actually sharing both of its as well. So if you look at it in this way, again, you don't have to know the precise chemical intricacies, but basically what's happening is that two of these guys share over here, two of these guys over there. But that means the oxygen will also give you two, and the oxygen will give you two. But if you calculate in total, now what's going on? For the oxygen, right? Remember, oxygen has six and wants to get to eight. If it shares two of them, then it's getting kind of two back. So that's six plus the two, you get eight, right? Same thing with the carbon. It's got four of them. Now if you share both of them, right? If you share double bonds, two of them, then it's going to get two back for each of those. So now you're getting kind of like eight, right? It's not looking exactly like this, but it's kind of, you know, it's still getting its full arrangement to get to the octet, which is eight. And similarly, the triple bonds are the same. If you want to get even more, but if you're already sharing one on one side, then what the heck, let's just share all the other ones in a double bond to get to eight total. Okay. Anyway, that just means that these guys can do single, double, or triple bonds in organic chemistry, in carbon chemistry. Okay, so what I want to start today is first talk about isomers. So there are different types of isomers, and isomers just means that it's the chemicals that have the same formulas. So, for example, you know, in this case, you know, C2H6, for example, any formula you like, but they have different arrangements somehow geometrically. So, for example, pentane is basically just five carbons, okay, with the appropriate number of hydrogens, right? But if you notice, you can actually move this carbon over here on this side, and when you move it over there, it will still be stable. It will also have the same number of hydrogens, right? Because it's forming the same number of bonds, right? It needs the four on the outer, okay? But in this case, it's now called butane because it's got four carbons. You don't have to know these names. These are just examples. Four carbons, but it's got this kind of methyl, they call it, stuff hanging out of it. But now it's a different structure, but it has the same formula. So that's why these guys are structural for isomers. Okay, so structurally it's different. That's not the only way you can have isomers, because on B here, you can also have what's called cis-trans isomers. Okay, in this case, actually, you have two carbons, so this is actually similar to the ethane example I gave you. So you have the carbon joined with the carbon here. But after you join these carbons, you have other groups coming out. So for example, you have some other functional group, like an OH for alcohol or anything like that. All right? I'll talk about functional groups in a second. But in this case, you can arrange them in any way you like. You can arrange them in this kind of direction where they are both on the same side, or you can arrange them on the opposite side. In this case, it actually has the same structural, you know, arrangement. Like the structure is still the same, but the geometry of where the groups are hanging is different. So this is not a structural isomer. It's still what is called cis-trans isomer. So the cis just means that it's on the same side on the stuff that comes out. Trans means it's coming out from opposite sides. People understand that? Slightly confusing, but these are just examples of isomers. Okay, there's different types of isomers. Even with the same formula, you have stuff that looks different. Another one is they're called enantiomers, right? So again, these are different from the cis-trans and from the structural. And these actually happen a lot in nature, so I'll talk about it in a bit. So, for example, sugars. This happens with sugars. Like, all the sugars in our body is the one type of isomer, and then all the sugars in some other types of animal, they could be from different types of sugars, okay? So, for example, this is what enantiomers are. For example, let's look at this kind of pyramidal type structure. It's called tetrahedral. But in this case, you have four different groups hanging out, okay? If you have four different groups hanging out, though, what it means is that the geometry of these guys can actually differ. So the reason you see that these two are not the same in the picture is that when you put this guy over here, they don't overlap, right? So the NH2 here, if you put it over here, they're going to put it on top of the H, right? You see what I'm saying? So I guess I should have made a better slide. But imagine this entire thing. You're now going to drag it over here. Okay? If you drag it all the way over here, then you notice that the H is going to now be on top of the N, right? And the N is going to be on top of the H. Is that right? Okay. So what that means is they're not the same. They're not exactly the same. They're actually just left and right hand versions. So exactly the same, but flipped. You have to flip the L to actually get to the D. Right? But they're not the same, actually. This is kind of hard to think about. You have to kind of visualize it. But three-dimensionally speaking, they are not the same, actually. So one is called the L isomer form, one is called the D isomer form. It's not important. The important part is just that they are reflections of each other. So left and right-handed versions of each other. So what that means is that these are actually, again, the same as what we defined earlier, right? They're not structure isomers because it's the same structure, right? Because that framework is the same. They're not cis-trans isomers because they're not groups that are just going one or the other and can kind of interchange. They are actually just enantiomers. Left, right hand analogs are the same thing. Okay, so these are isomers. So, okay, having said that, what kind of isomers are these two? So one is called propanol, one is called acetone. So what do you guys think these isomers are? So they have the same formula, right? Three carbons, right? One oxygen, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hydrogen, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hydrogen. But what kind of isomers are these of the three that I talked about? I have chocolate. Can I tempt you with chocolate? People who answer questions, either correctly or incorrectly, hopefully correctly, this is Belgian harvest. It's directly harvested from Belgium. Look, there's seashells from Belgium, except chocolate-fied on the way here. Anyone want to just guess one? All right, I'm just going to stay here until somebody raises their hand and says something. Okay. Wait, hold on. What's your name? So I can. What's your name?
Sayaka.
Sayaka. Hi, Sayaka.
Structural isomer.
That's right. Structural isomer. So, can you explain why, or just briefly, I guess?
So it's not any atomic or D1.
Right. Exactly. Perfect. Process of elimination. Here's your word. So, actually, I love the way Saika just thought about this, right? So, in the exam, I want you guys to do the same thing, right? You eliminate things that are not correct. That's like the perfect way to do it. First of all, I'll just tell you now, the multiple choices are four, you know, A, B, C, D, right, on the exam. So really, all you have to say is, like, if it's not A, and it's not C, and it's not B, then it has to be D. So she did kind of the same thing. Well, these cannot be, enantiomers, because if you I mean, they're just not left, right, analog, because one of them has it coming up on the last one as opposed to the middle one. And they cannot be also cis-trans-sized, because cis-trans requires you to have the same kind of stuff in the center and only different kind of on the side in terms of how they arrange themselves. So therefore, they're structural isomers. And if you look at them, one of them has the oxygen coming out on the right side and one of them has the middle. And these are structurally different, so therefore they are just structural isomers. So don't worry, you're going to get the chance next time. Don't worry. Thank you for raising your hand. Okay. All right, so let's see. So now we're going to talk about functional groups. So we talked about isomers. Hopefully you guys know what isomers are. So functional groups are the following. So in the chemistry that we talked about, mostly in this class, a lot of times we're going to talk about certain things that have certain reactive properties within them, right? And these are what we're going to call functional groups. So there are specific elements worth of stuff that kind of hangs out on the main chain of your molecules. A lot of times it's carbon, right? In the body, remember, you know, as a colo, is that colo? Is there, as colo said last time, carbon is like kind of the main thing that makes up kind of your structure in the body, right? So the lipids and, you know, things like that, right? So what makes the difference now is what hangs out in front of these carbons, right? And these are kind of some of the groups. You don't have to kind of memorize it yet, but over time as we go on in this class, I will kind of start talking about one or the other. So I just wanted to introduce them to you, you know, for fun. So these are the kind of things that kind of hang out that can react with other species. They can kind of hang out in the cell. They can hang out on the membranes, for example, so that cells can recognize them. So one basic one is stuff that we're very familiar with as students and also Japanese people, I guess, is alcohol, right? Alcohol is is the stuff, you know, that's also alcohol. But in this case, in the chemistry part of it, it's just the OH group. Very simple. See, alcohol is very simple. You guys can make your own alcohol anytime you want, right? So OH group, remember, it's just kind of part of water, except in this case, it's just kind of attached to something, okay? So the OH group allows you to have a little bit of a polarity to it because of the OH, because this hydrogen here is going to be slightly positive, and then this oxygen is going to be slightly negative. So instead of just this flat carbon, which has no charge, no polarity, when if you have an OH group on it, it gives you a little bit of a reactivity. Yeah, just a little bit where you can kind of get attracted to one thing or the other, like, for example, in water. All right, so it makes it slightly polar reactive. Example is given on the right side. The next thing is carboxyl group. So carboxyl is carbon with this double bond and oxygen with OH on it. And, you know, you don't have to know the formulas, place where you see that a lot is, for example, in proteins. It's one of the things that forms the backbones of the amino acids. Okay. Amino group is the other thing that helps to form the protein. So actually, you can see how actually that the amino group is going to actually react in a complementary way to another carboxylic acid, which is the carboxyl group I said earlier. And when you react those two together, actually, you can get these chains of protein. You know, so it's carbon-carbon, nitrogen-carbon, carbon-nitrogen, which form the backbones of proteins. So I'm sorry, I haven't introduced these things yet, but protein will be introduced later in the lectures. But the protein is the kind of things that actually do things in the cell. So I'll talk about that in a little bit. And then also you have these sulfhydryl groups. So these guys are actually going to link groups that are far away from each other. So these are basically sulfur coming out. And then the sulfur is going to... So if you have a protein, then if you have a SOFA group here and a SOFA group that's really far away, what happens is that they can react with each other and kind of join these, you know, things together, so that even when it's really far away, it can actually interact together. So, for example, you have a protein that has an arm like this and it has an arm like that. And then if you have the SOFA groups that react with each other, they're going to join together like this in a covalent way as it goes on to do things. Okay. Okay, so these other groups, I'll just introduce them when I get to them, because I think I realize there's a little bit too much information. But what you should know, though, is that these functional groups, whichever they are that I talked about earlier, they basically are joined to the carbon backbone of things. You know, for example, if you look at this guy right here, you have a carbon, more or less carbon backbone here, but it's joined to, in this case, the phosphate group. And the way they join are just covalent bonds, right? So that's how they kind of put, that's how you kind of put things together. So in general, basically, in life, you have a lot of carbon chains. Remember, that's what we said earlier, that's what kind of makes up life. You have a lot of carbon chains, and because that makes up membranes and it makes up parts of cells, right? And it allows you to compartmentalize cells. But off those carbons, these functional groups are going to be covalently joined in one place or the other, and that's what gives them these kind of, I call them personalities. That just means they can react different ways. Okay. So, for example, you have this phosphate group, which is also very important. It's part of this energy currency of the cell. But again, when you join them to a carbon, that gives it the property that you have. Okay. So that's really all you have to know about chemistry in the cell. Just a bunch of carbons in some chain, and then little things hanging out. And then you just have to kind of, oh, I see that chain. It must be such and such. Right? So if it's alcohol, oh, it must be polar. It must be kind of some reactivity, for example. Okay, I want to briefly talk about, again, you don't have to know any structure for this class. Okay, you don't have to know the precise chemical structure for anything. But I will give you some extra information so that when I go on in the future and use this term, you guys will say, okay, it's actually this big picture. So this term I will use quite a bit, which is ATP. How many of you guys have actually heard of ATP? Good, most of you from high school or whatever. Okay, good. So ATP, they call it the energy currency of the cell. And what it just means is that it's kind of capturing energy in one form and transferring it to the other. So it's just kind of temporarily grabbing the energy in a certain form. And the way it does that is that it takes it in the form of phosphate groups, right? So this is what the actual chemistry looks like, right? So in the case where there's three phosphate groups bind, so by the way, this is actually just adenosine triphosphate. So adenosine is just this guy, which is a base hanging out. And it has three phosphates attached. And phosphate, remember, I just talked about, it's one of these functional groups. Okay? You don't have to know why it looks like this, but it just does. Okay, so if you have these three groups hanging out, it turns out this is a kind of a higher energy form, because when you have water coming in and reacting, that water, actually the oxygen reacts with one of this oxygen in the middle, and then this guy can actually come off, so one of these phosphates actually come out. When it comes out, actually you actually release energy, right? Because it turns out it's slightly more stable, right? When you have the two phosphate groups and the one that comes out. But anyways, so the idea is just that when you have water coming in, actually you can get rid of one of the phosphate, and to go from ATP, you go to ADP, which is this adenine diphosphate. Okay. Anyways, ADP releases energy, but it also means that if you put in energy, you can actually convert the ADP to ATP. Okay? So you notice, like, whenever I want to actually emphasize something, I don't just say it. I just kind of That's how I emphasize. So that's how you guys know what's important, okay? So the important part here is that actually you can run this backwards, okay? This is not going to be in the slide. If you're not here, you have no idea what's going on. Okay, the ADP, you put in energy, and it will join with this other phosphate group, right? And brings it to the higher energy form, which is the ATP. So what that means is reactions in the cell, for example, that breaks down sugar. So say you eat a lot, right? And you have a lot of sugar in your body, right? That sugar, now you can actually let's talk about exercise. You do a lot of exercise, right? You need to use a lot of sugar. You're running out of sugar, right? So what you do is actually, because you have extra sugar sitting around, right, that your body has, like, for example, energy reserves, what you can do is that you use that sugar to harvest some energy from them, right? And then you use that energy to put into your ADP and get back ATP, which now you can use in other parts of the cell to do other reactions because you're doing lots of stuff, right? Right? And then say you eat a lot, right? If you eat a lot, now you want to convert stuff into sugar. So now you're going to, there's some reactions that occur that allows you to have a lot of ATPs in the body. And then what you do is now you react with water and then you get this energy back, but the energy now you can put back into the sugar, for example. Okay, I don't know if that was a great example, but the idea is just that it's not just like that. It's not what I gave you, the very simplified version. That's not what happens in the body, but this is one of the ways that you can have interchangeable parts. You have ADP, you go into a place where you can harvest energy, you can get some energy back, convert into ATP, put it to some other place where you need the ATP to run certain reactions. Okay. That's the idea with the ATP. Okay, so now you know what ATPs are. So the last part of the chemistry before we move on to cells and organelles today, which is the main topic today, are the kind of three main classes of things in our bodies, right? So I sort of started talking about this already, but now I want to give you the complete picture. There are carbohydrates, which are just sugars, right? And I learned recently it's tan sui kabutsu, for those of you who want to translate. So it's carbohydrates are mostly basically just sugars, right? But they come in very different forms. Because we're a little bit behind, I don't have time to go over exactly the chemistry of all of them, but I will just kind of introduce the different types of carbohydrates. And this is, for example, if you think about your daily life, you're getting these things from, for example, rice and bread. That's got lots of carbohydrates in it. And also you're getting it from, Belgian seashells. That's where you can also get carbohydrates. Proteins are different. Proteins are the actual things in your body that actually, mix it up, right? And within proteins, you kind of have two main types. One is kind of the structural proteins, and that's literally what's making you up. Like you have muscles and things like that. Those are proteins. But you also have what are called enzymes. Right? I didn't write it down, but I will talk about it in the future. Enzymes are proteins that actually can catalyze reactions. So what that means is that it allows certain reactions in the cells to occur. Okay? So enzymes are very important part of protein. Actually, these are all important, but I would say the second and third things are the things that we talk about most, which are, again, proteins, for example, enzymes that make reactions, right? And it binds to certain things and then allows things to happen and then allows the reaction to occur. And actually makes the reaction more readily possible because in general, reactions are more difficult. You actually need to do things to get chemicals in a certain form that the reaction will actually occur. And then the last part is what we'll talk about a lot in the genetics part of it, are nucleic acids. So nucleic acids are the ones, basically if you think about it, it's DNA and RNA. Okay, so you guys all heard of DNA, I presume. But DNA is one nucleic acid. And then nucleic acids in general, DNA and RNA, are basically carrying around your genetic information. So this is the kind of stuff that you kind of give to your offspring, for example, right? So a bacteria, for example, you carry DNA, and then that DNA gives you a template for how to do things. So the way it occurs basically is that the DNA codes for how you build a protein, for example. Okay? If you now, you know, translate that DNA into a readable form, and then from that template you now read it off, you can actually read off that template and build your proteins according to the specification of the DNA. So the nucleic acid is that information. It's pure. It's more or less pure information that you're carrying around. And then you're using that information to build things in the body, like proteins, for example. So that's kind of, this is why I'm emphasizing these two. It's basically, you know, that's what cells are doing. It's carrying the genetic information, and then it's kind of reproducing that genetic information. But when it needs to build stuff, it reads off that genetic information and builds things. For example, proteins. And then proteins can go out and do stuff, right? They can process your sugars, they can build, you know, muscles, you know, whatever you want to do, right? Catalyzing reactions that allows you to get ATP and then et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of like three different levels. Yeah. What I just said, I will talk about in more detail one more time later. But those are the three types of main molecules in the cell. Okay, we don't have to talk about this, sorry. But basically, okay. I mean, this is not super important, but basically what this tells you is just that you have a lot of units that you can build into bigger units. You know, just like I was saying with carbons and also with the proteins. So, you know, you don't really have to know this. Okay, so, and then when you build things into this multi-units, this is where, you know, you have simplicity or more complicated stuff. So, for example, in carbohydrates, you can have different types of sugars. Again, you don't have to know any of these formulas. Okay. As I was saying, because I'm slightly behind, I don't have time to actually go over different types of sugars. So, but you also don't have to know it, really. I mean, as biologists, you don't really have to know this, actually. So these are just different types of sugars. Glucose is the stuff that we kind of are most familiar with. But based on what the chemistry looks like, again, where certain OH groups lie and how they join together, you have different types of sugar. That's all it is. And then the sugar is actually linked together to form also structure. So these guys along with the proteins are the ones that give you structure in the cell. Okay? So, for example, you have starch and you have cellulose. Chemically, they're different and they form different things. So, for example, starch you can find in all over the place, like potato, that's a starch, all kinds of structural components. Cellulose you find in plants a lot, for example. Glucose, of course, is the actual sugar, like this. It's glucose. Yeah. Gives you energy in the animal body, for example. And again, you're just joining those single carbons along with these functional groups together. In this case, the functional groups are very simple. They're just OHs mostly. Yeah. Okay. Here's one thing that I will talk about a bit that you should know a little bit about, and it's lipids, right? Lipids and membranes. So this is kind of a good way to transition into the next thing, which is about cells. Cells are mostly made up of, well, water, because that's, as we know from last time, water is everywhere. And also lipids, right? Membranes, right? So it turns out most of the cell is just a lot of different membranes that kind of joins it together. I'll talk about the actual cell in a little while. But first, I just want to tell you the chemistry of how the components of the guys that actually form the membrane of these cells. So membranes are kind of the covering the outside of the cell and also different bits and pieces of the inside. So it turns out you have three components. One, you have this three carbon thing, which is called glycerol. It's just alcohol groups, basically. Again, you don't have to know the chemistry, chemical structure. The other thing is that you have this fatty acid, right? So this is just a long, long chain of carbons, right? So remember what I said earlier is that I said something about, well, cells are mostly just a bunch of carbon chains. This is why, right? Because these fatty acids are just single carbon, 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 carbon. Basically, they're kind of just fats. That's why they're called fatty acids. Fats, what does that mean? That just means these are covalent guys that don't have stuff coming out of them, right? Except, in this case, there's little acid in the back, this carboxylic acid in the back. But what that means is that, this part of it does not react with water, because water is polar, it wants to have little charges interact with... water will interact with alcohol groups here, but not with this carbon chain, which is already self-sufficient. It doesn't need any extra... It doesn't have any charges, basically. There's no polar charges on it. Right? So these guys, when you join them together, they form one part of this fatty acid, and then in the actual membrane, you have those two guys along with a phosphate group. Phosphate we saw earlier, right? So in the membranes of cells, this is what you should know, is that the membranes of cells are made up of these guys, which is one fatty acid joined to a glycerol via this reaction here that you saw earlier that releases water. And that thing is now covalently joined to the phosphate. Okay? So you don't have to know the kink, whatever. It's just a long chain of carbons. That's really all you have to know. And this is kind of what is called hydrophobic area. Hydrophobic just means it doesn't like water. Phobic means you don't like. Hydro means water. So water don't like hydrophobic, right? And then this side, where the phosphate is the hydrophilic end, right? Hydrophilic just means philic, like, hydro, water, like, hydrophilic. Okay? So this is the part that kind of does interact with water, and that, again, that's because of the charges here on this side. But what that means is that now you have these kind of shape where you have one side that likes water and one side that doesn't. It turns out in the cell membrane, you just have these two guys lying sort of tail to tail on the arrangement that you see below. Okay, so hopefully this makes sense. But hydrophilic side, which likes water, is on the outside looking at the water. Okay, same thing on this side. But the hydrophobic end is inside. Okay, it's inside away from the water. So this layer, right, it's called the phospholipid layer, is basically you have water on each side. So if you think about the cell, this could be the outside of the cell on the top here and the inside of the cell on the bottom, for example. Right? But basically, water is everywhere, so therefore this forms a kind of a compartment. It allows you to have to say, well, this is the outside and that's the inside. But the way it forms is actually, it has it's a bilayer. It's two of these molecules tail to tail, right? With the hydrophilic water-loving side looking out, hydrophobic water-hating side looking in. So what that means is if you want to get through this layer to go from the outside of the cell into the inside, you have to do something. There has to be some proteins in there that allows you to go through. Or somehow, if you're a fat, you could have to go through that hydrophilic end to get to the hydrophobic end and then somehow get to the other side. But that's not going to happen. So most of the time, things just can't move through this layer easily unless you have proteins inside that allows things to go through. Okay? So that's how you form structure. And that's really all it is. I mean, if you think about it, structure in our bodies is just, you know, coming from membranes like this in the cells that allows you to compartmentalize. So, you know, it's very interesting how these things actually first came about. And in a future lecture, I'll talk about how you can actually, you know, how is it that we actually got these guys in the first place in terms of evolution. Okay, and then so these are the membranes of cells. And then finally, we talked about this a little bit already. I'm not going to go into detail again. Is that proteins? Proteins are the things that actually do things in a cell. And there's a lot of them. They're enzymes which catalyze reactions. They're transport proteins which actually lie on the membranes and allows you to have things coming in and going out, for example. And yeah, I mean, we're not going to be able to talk about this right now, but if, as time goes on in the future lectures, we'll talk about one thing or the other. Many different types of proteins. Okay, and this you don't have to know, but proteins are actually made from these reactions. This is what I said that you don't have to know, but basically you have this carboxylic acid and you have this nitrogen group, then they kind of react together and you have this backbone that, again, I talked about earlier, where you have the N, C, C, N, C, C, N, C, C, and repeating. All right, so that's just, again, you don't have to know that, but basically you can just say proteins are joined by individual groups, which are called amino acids. Amino acids, when you join them together, form proteins. And the only thing that's really important about that is that in the future, when we talk about how you go from the DNA to the protein, remember, the DNA is the guy that specifies, you know, things in the cell. Once you translate that and you use that transcript to now build your proteins that are actually going to do things and also make up parts of the cell, there's a trick, right? Because you have to go from a DNA information, which are nucleic acids, to the amino acid information, which are proteins. So that's the only point where the amino acid comes in, is that there are basically a bunch of different amino acids, and they all have, you know, they're all specified by different code in your DNA. And when you join them together, it forms a long chain, and then from that chain, it kind of builds into three-dimensional structures, which are proteins. Okay. So anyways, proteins are made of amino acids, which I don't have time to talk about exactly what they are. Okay, so I give you a couple of questions, which are, these are a little bit more challenging than the ones in the exam. So in the exam, I will test you more kind of more basic stuff. But because these are things I'm giving you, I will, you know, giving you answers to, I want you guys to think about this. So I want to give you like 5-10 minutes, so you guys can actually form groups. So, for example, I'm just going to make it up right now. Like, over here, Sayaka, and, sorry, in front, we have one group, and the three in the back, for example. Three here on this table. Maybe you guys can kind of move in and talk about what you guys think is the answer. And then the three here, one, two, three, and then probably the last four somehow. But anyways, somehow, if you need someone close, so you can just talk about it. Unless you guys are like, oh, this is easy, no problem, then it would help if you kind of, you know, talk about and think about what these answers could be. And I'll give you 5-10 minutes, and then I'll ask some groups for some answers. Let me see. I used to have speakers, but so anyways, yeah, so 5-10 minutes, think about what these are, talk amongst yourselves. You can all read this? Yes, no problem? Okay. And I can come around and help too. Thank you. What about the first one? What do you guys think? So, so these are actually not exactly what I talked about. I'm sorry, they're a little bit harder. Usually it's going to be like
yeah, but it's not.
Which one? Which no? Which problem? Okay. So that's just C, how you did it. So C actually you saw in the lecture. Well, you saw it in the lecture. So it's the part of that that makes up. So remember the fatty acids in the lipid? So the fatty acid on the lipid joins to the glycerol, which is the alcohol. And then so that's part of the membrane of the cell. So what I'll tell you is that it's an alcohol. It's a, it's one type of alcohol, so it, it just means it has an OH, it actually has three OH groups, but it has OH groups, so then you can think about whether that, what's your name?
Jennifer.
Jennifer. Awesome. Okay. So that's, so, so remember alcohol, no, so you have to think about whether alcohol is wrong. So you need to so remember, the groups that have only carbons, along the
your religion is talking about.
This would help to have English and Japanese. So someone that took my class last time, I don't know how she got it, but she had a biology book that was English on one side and Japanese on the other side. But in this case, yeah, I put along with biology, there's a lot of words. There's a lot of terms. Including acid, DNA. But you seem to understand this grammar and everything pretty well. So I think, you if I show you what I expect you to know, you probably be, oh, that's pretty easy. Like, so this is not the way. This is harder just so that people can discuss as a group and figure out, because it's supposed to be a little bit harder. But anyways, we can see how okay. All right, so chocolate time, guys. Chocolate time. So, which group wants to try to answer the first one? First one. Oh, back there. What's your name?
Akari.
Huh?
Akari.
Akari? Okay. Akari, what do you think?
Gay.
Okay. Why is that?
I kind of research all of them because I know some of them, but.
Okay. It's okay.
Hexans made of.
Right. And what about the other ones?
The ones I knew was B, potassium chloride, it's in the cell because it's only on that compound.
Exactly.
And D, ethanol.
Ethanol, yeah.
It's an alcohol, so it's up from water.
Exactly. It's polar, so therefore it interacts with the water, yeah.
And A and B, I researched it.
So C, remember, is what I just talked about. It's the part of the lipid, right? It has three, we don't have to memorize that, but it has those three OH groups coming out as part of the acid. So it does interact with water by itself. And then what about A? A is an acid, so it's going to, okay, so acid, remember, hydrogen groups, that's going to be, charge, things are the water. Great, awesome. You get your take of your seashells, our sea stars. Awesome. So she just, so Akari-san just got a very, very nice answer. Very nice answer. First of all, she knew the answer. But secondly, she also said, well, okay, it's not that, it's not that. So that's, again, like, that's a great way to think about how to do these questions. Any group want to try the second one? Okay, Nicole? Okay, why? Oh.
Because water has a unusually high specific heat, meaning that it requires more energy as in the form of heat to increase the temperature of the water to a boiling point. time to change it from liquid to vapor.
Right, exactly. So it's kind of like what I said the first thing. Yeah. Oh, by the way, you guys, everybody in the group gets sheltered. Because you guys all contributed to the sensor. Yeah, so what you said exactly, high specific heat or heat capacity, whichever you want to say, that's what it means, is that when you put in heat, you need to put in a lot to have it be boiling, right? That's how you get from liquid water to gas water, for example. Right? So the other ones also is that you can also just eliminate the other ones, right? Because if you know what specific heat, if you know what specific heat means, then you know that the other guys don't make any sense. No. Ice flows in liquid water. Yeah, it's true, but what does that have to do with specific heat? So anyways, so I guess that one is a little bit more geared towards like, well, if you know the answer, then you're just going to get it. Okay, so finally, I think, 10 o'clock, but I'm finally done with, these are the answers. I'm finally done with this lecture, okay? So, again, anything that I don't cover, I won't ask you for it later. I just wanted to make sure you guys have a basic understanding of what's going on. So first, I need to take attendance. I was supposed to do this actually while you guys were discussing. But real quickly, let me just call it out. Yuichiro is here? Not here? Okay. Interesting start. Okay. Yushan? You Xian, you just go by Xian? Okay. Xian, okay. And then Leia?
Yeah.
Okay, Leia. Awesome. So their names. Pei Chen?
Yeah.
Jennifer, right? Go by, let me just write that down so I can remember. You go by Jennifer. Okay. Sorry, you guys are looking at this Roshi, right? You're like, yeah. What's your student ID number? Too bad you can't see that. Okay. Xu Tian?
Colo.
So is it?
Chao Xu
Tian. Oh, but I'll just write down like that?
K-O-L-O.
Okay. Colo. Colonization. Okay. Sakura?
Yeah.
Okay. Sakura. Easy to remember. Ingrid, right here. Akari, back there. All right. Akemi, all right. I'm learning half of these names already. June.
Just call me June.
Just June? Okay. I'll just write down June. Okay, June. Makoto? Okay, Makoto. I see. Majime, Makoto. Sorry, now I remember things. Yeah. Okay. Oh boy. Somebody needs to help me out with this. Is it Aigeru?
Yes.
Aigeru?
Yes, please
call me Aigeru. Aigeru? Okay, cool. Aigeru. Okay. Sayaka? Okay. And then Ren? Okay. Ren, remember. Okay, Yuri? No Yuri? Okay. Cool. And then, what's your Bowie?
Matsushita.
Is that right? Okay. So, the other information I'll get later. But, just want to make sure I have it down as you're being here. And then, anybody that I didn't call that is supposed to be, like, registered? Okay.
Shinji.
Shinji. Yoshimo.
Top.
Okay. And also, I guess you're going to register, I guess, right? Okay. Cool. Anybody else? Oh, okay.
I'm Sundara. I'm here.
Ka? Ka. Okay. Inside the mountain, right? Inside the mountain? Cool. Great to have you guys out here. It's lovely to have the other people who join, because that means, you know, you're like, oh, this class is great. Join. Yes, I join. Okay. All right. So these slides will also be online. So again, you guys don't have to be like crazy off of it. But I also realized we don't have time to talk about everything, but again, it will just carry over. So, you know, if I don't finish this lecture, it'll just continue next lecture, so you guys don't have to worry, oh, I have to know all this stuff. And in addition, halfway through these slides, I will have a slide that says the rest of these slides you don't have to know. Yeah, so, most of it. Okay, so don't have to worry, we're going to go on our own pace, slowly through it. Whatever we get through, and only the important stuff you have to know. Okay? Alright, so before we go on, just kind of a small break for you guys. You can access these later in the course Navi. These are some of the helpful resources that I can see online, right? So you guys love learning online, right? It'd be great if you can just learn on Facebook, right? You just go on Facebook and it's like, yeah, mitochondria, you know, whatever. So actually, I try to do that, and the best thing I can find is that you can just Google Campbell Biology 10th edition online. That's the key, right? This one, online, right? That's the thing that gives you the good free PDF stuff. Okay, so like, I don't sell drugs. I don't, you know, advocate downloading whatever. Although this is how I made these slides. But if you want to kind of see what's going on, you can also try to Google this. Again, I didn't tell you to do that. You just did it on your own after looking at these slides. Okay, there's also a couple more in-depth things in case those of you who are really into it and want to look at it in the detail. And these are really great because these are actually textbooks that we use to when I was at UC Berkeley, we used these to study. This is how I learned it, actually. Is a couple of textbooks. One is by Lotus, Molecular Biology of the Cell, and that's completely free online. It's really great. If you want to just even read like the introductory aspects of it, that will work for you, especially if you find it very interesting. Neuroscience, also, again, I study neuroscience on my days off. And also online on this website called PubMed. Again, you can Google that. I also found an online biology textbook. This is great. Like, you don't have to buy anything. This book, Campbell, in addition to possibly being online in some form or the other, or possibly downloadable through I'm going to publish this, so maybe I shouldn't say anything. Okay, so possibly being online in one form or the other, this book is also in the library. Okay, it's like on reserve. And there's like multiple copies of it, and there might be different editions. So if you guys get a chance, you should just definitely look at this, you know, because it's a very, very easy read, I feel like. You know, if your English is not, you know, super great or anything, it's also good to look at this textbook because it tries to be very simple and you can kind of one step at a time. If you're not great at English, it does take you some time to read it. But the good thing about it is that I am only really doing one chapter each time in this book. Like, I'm not trying to do like tons and tons of chapters and put it into one lecture because biology is a huge topic. I try to just do one thing, do it well. If we don't get through it, it's okay. We just do that one thing well. So it's actually, what that means is that it's limited number of pages. So I really encourage you to actually look in this book, which is in the library and also in other places, possibly. Okay. But if you don't get to that, the next best thing, you can check out this online biology textbook, which actually tells you a lot in a little bit, more terse way. Okay, so now finally we're going to talk about cells. Whatever we're not going to finish, we're going to finish next time. Okay, so if cell is an organism. So cell, remember, I'm going to talk about a little bit more detail, but it's basically the components of our bodies. Everything in our body is made up of individual cells. But cells themselves are now made up of things called organelles, right? So organelles are kind of these sub-organs within the cell. So first, talk a little bit about cells, right? So there's kind of two main classifications of organisms, right? One are called prokaryotes, and one are called eukaryotes. So this is what I'm going to talk about first, are called prokaryotes, right? So prokaryotes are a little bit more simpler version, okay? It turns out in the prokaryotic cell, right, so these are the more simpler types of cells, DNA is kind of just, you know, found kind of just floating around. And the other thing about prokaryotic cells is that they don't have internal membranes. So they just have this one kind of outside membrane that I talked about that separates the outside water from the inside water, which is inside the cell. You have a lot of different structures that right now we don't need to talk about yet. But the big idea is just that prokaryotes are kind of simpler organisms. They're simpler cells, and they don't have internal membranes, right? And they have DNA that's just floating around, okay? The other main type of cell are eukaryotic cells. So eukaryotic cells are a little bit more complicated. If you even look at this, it's a little bit bigger, and it's also got a lot of internal structure. And this internal structure actually is membraned. So membrane is what I talked about earlier with the, remember, the fatty acids and the phosphate and all that? That's the lipid bilayer that forms these membranes. So the bilayer, again, just means that those two molecules are laying one on top of the other. But those fats are the things that make up the membrane, okay? But in the eukaryotic cell, everything is organized within membranes, unlike the prokaryotic cell. And these membranes include the nucleus, which are the ones that are kind of holding the DNA, right? And also things outside, including the Golgi apparatus, which kind of transports things around, and also mitochondria, which basically allows you to produce energy with ATP using sugars. So I will talk about each individual part of this, or the main parts of this, in this lecture. But these are what cells are. Eukaryotic cells more complicated, and then prokaryotic cells are simpler. So you can, it's not exactly the same, but you can think of these kind of more like bacteria. You know, a lot of them are these kind of prokaryotic. And then eukaryotic cell, for example, the animal cells, for example. You know, so more complicated, more structured. A little bit later in evolution as well. Okay, so first the nucleus. So again, nucleus is the thing that holds genetic information. And the information that you hold, actually, when the cell reproduces, you need to actually duplicate the information and divide it into the both parts of your cell, to the new cell. So this is what the nucleus looks like. So the nucleus, it's got these little pores on them, okay? So the pores, again, is because this is a membrane, it allows the transport of things inside and outside this part of the cell. So it's kind of like, if you think about it, it's like a cell within the cell. You have a membrane around the cell, and then within the cell there's a nucleus, and then to transport things into and out the nucleus, also you need to go through these pores, right? And these pores are very selective. Remember what I talked about before, last time, where you have these very specific fits of the molecules. A certain part of the molecule fits onto the receptor of the cell, and it has to be a certain shape before it actually attaches. So this is an example with the endorphins and the morphines, if you guys remember. So that's the same idea with these pores, is that it has to be a certain fit. So in this case, it has to be a certain size before it can go through. Anything bigger, these ions will not go through. So lots of pores that allow the specific types of things to come in and out. The actual membrane is just called a nuclear envelope, right? But it's the same kind of thing. You have a membrane that's made up of fatty acids, phospholipids that surrounds the nucleus. It turns out it has this region called the nucleolus. Nucleolus is where the specific form of RNA is produced. So it's kind of where the RNA is kind of concentrated within the cell. Chromatin and chromosome I will talk about later, but basically it's just round up bits of DNA. The DNA gets round up into chromosomes, and then when you have proteins that aggregate along with these chromosomes, they form this complex called the chromatin. And that's all within the nucleus. Okay. So there's a flow of genetic information here. So I kind of talked about it when I introduced the different types of molecules, chemicals in the cell, which are, remember, the carbohydrates, the nucleic acids, and the protein. So the reason I've emphasized that is because now I will also talk about it in a little bit of detail, is that what you're doing in the cell is that you're going from the DNA, which gives you the genetic information, into the protein, which is the thing that actually goes out and does things within the cell. For example, catalyzed reactions. So what happens is that within the nucleus, you have this DNA, right? And when it needs to copy DNA, it'll just, enzymes will come in and actually unwind this DNA and make copies of itself. But when it needs to make protein, which is what the DNA is actually coding for, what the code in the DNA is specifying, it needs a different enzyme which unwinds the DNA and makes RNA out of it. RNA is very similar to DNA, except the sugar is different. You don't have to know that, but it's very similar to DNA. It's, instead of the deoxyribose, you have ribose. So it is. But when you have an RNA that comes from the DNA template, you can now use the RNA to make protein, right? So basically, this other organelle called ribosome, which I'll talk about later, actually accepts this RNA and can use that to translate that into amino acids. And amino acids are the components of proteins. So the big story here again is that DNA codes for genetic information and it can duplicate over and over. But when you need to make proteins or enzymes or make things that actually go out and do things or make up structural parts of the cell, then you need to translate that into RNA, transport that outside the nucleus, and make that into protein. Okay? So that's why I talked about it in regards to the nucleus, is because that's where the DNA is stored. Okay. This is what a nucleus actually looks like when you look them up very closely using an electron microscope. You have a lot of pores here, and the pores, again, allows you to have molecules going in and out. It turns out there's kind of a proteins that are kind of lying sort of on the inner surface of the nucleus. They're just called lamina. It's not important. It's just that that protein allows the nucleus to have a certain shape. Okay? So the lamina inside that nucleus is actually holding it up as a scaffold. And these are just proteins. You make these proteins just like you make other types of proteins. Right. So in addition to the membrane, you also have proteins that kind of structurally hold it up. And then I will talk about this also in the genetics part of the lectures, but basically in the nucleus, the DNA is actually organized in a specific way. So the DNA itself is made up of bases. I won't talk about that right now, but basically different bases will tell you the different types of information. That's why there's a code there, because the different bases in the DNA is specifying different information. But the DNA is actually wind up. So they, first of all, they curl with respect to each other already, because the DNA structure is this kind of double helix shape, it's called. Double helix just means it's wind like this, like a ribbon form. That's called a helix. Okay. And then there's two of them kind of joined together. Okay, I didn't say this specifically, but it's always found in this double form. So you always have two things that are giving you the same information, that are bound to each other. Okay, so it's double helix. And these bases are actually complementary. So it turns out when you know one base, you know the other base, because it's always binding in this kind of adenine to thymine, guanine to cytosine thing. Anyways, we'll talk about more in the genetics, but basically you have a double ribbon shape, right? Double helical form of the DNA. And then this helical form now kind of winds amongst itself, and again it joins. It actually has proteins within it that helps it to wind even better. And this protein also forms a bigger structure. And then, again, this is kind of very interesting because you can go from the very molecular chemical level all the way to the global level. DNA joining together, proteins on top of the DNA that helps it wind, winding together, more global shape, and that global shape actually winds it into this kind of like a butterfly shape. And you have two of them because you have two chromosomes. So when at rest in the cell, you actually have two copies of the chromosome. In addition to the DNA itself having duplicated information in the terms of the bases, but that entire DNA is also duplicated in the cell itself in the form of these chromosomes, because the chromosome has two copies of the same thing, actually. Right, and it's joined in the center. Right. I'll talk about this in the genetics part more, and also in the life cycle of the cell part. But anyways, all this DNA, when it's joined together, it's formed this shape called a chromosome, basically. DNA forms in the chromosome. Chromosome, along with proteins, form into chromatin. And that is inside the nucleus. Okay, and it gives you genetic information. Okay. That's the long and short of it. This is the same information, just presented using different artist's rendition. Again, the DNA kind of makes it into these more complicated shapes. When it joins with a protein, it's called histone, it forms this kind of, they call it the beads on a string manner. It just means that these are DNA, and then DNA, wind, and then DNA, and then DNA, wind. And the other thing, I mean, one other reason you have it in the shape is that it kind of protects them too. So it won't, like, so when you need to access the DNA, for example, if you want to make another RNA that can be used to make new proteins, you actually have to go in and unwind the DNA within this histone, this protein. So you can't just, like, not anybody can just come in. You have to, like, have a precise mechanism to go into this histone complex, open up the DNA, copy the DNA into RNA, take the RNA out, you know, transport it outside the nucleus, and then make proteins from them. So that's another reason why you have proteins here, to kind of compact, to kind of protect them as well. And the other reason is you have compaction. So you have, because of these proteins, now you can actually fit all these miles and miles of DNA into a very compact form. And then when you have an even more compact form, it turns out you can have these kind of loops, and then the loops go into folds. And I mean, it's amazing looking at this picture, because that individual code of the DNA of the bases, through many, 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 many levels of, you know, interaction and compaction, gets you to this level where you can actually see in the microscope of the chromosome, right? So it's like many, many levels. It's kind of like looking at Earth from this galaxy level. It's like very, a lot of detail going on. Okay. I'll talk about the cell cycle in a future lecture, so I won't talk about this now, but the short period, the short spiel is that it turns out the cells are always in a cycle. Basically, they reproduce, and the reproduction part of it, splitting into half, is called mitosis. And basically, what happens is that in the other phases, you need to go and copy your DNA. You copy your DNA, you make multiple copies of your chromosome, and then during mitosis, you can separate that the genetic information into two offsprings, which are just daughter cells, daughter cells of your initial cell. This is a whole lecture, so I will talk about that later. Nucleolus I talked about a little bit earlier. It's, you know, I don't think it's super important, but what you should know again is that it's where the rRNA is being made. So it turns out one of the organelles I'll talk about next time, ribosome. Ribosome is actually the thing that actually makes RNA from, makes proteins from RNA. And it turns out you need to actually make those guys. So the nucleolus is where you actually make those guys. So what you should just remember is just the nucleolus is where the rRNAs are. Okay, so you actually also have RNA inside the nucleus. So RNA eventually is going to be the thing that converts your RNA into protein. That's also being made in the nucleus. Okay. So, how am I doing on time? I have 5 minutes. So, I will just start talking about ribosomes, and then next time I will also come back to this. Okay? So, don't worry if you're not getting it all yet. So, the organelles are very important, so I'll spend time on this. But ribosome is what I a little bit talked about earlier in regards to nucleus. So, nucleus, we're kind of finished. But the ribosome is a different organelle. Ribosome actually can make proteins from RNA. So remember, go back to the story of DNA to RNA, right? Some guys come in and copy the DNA into the RNA, which basically has a complementary base, but you only need one strand of it. Because remember, this is like redundant information. Now you need to make the RNA into protein. How do you do that? You have ribosome. And the process is called translation. Translating the RNA code in the forms of these bases into proteins in the form of amino acids. Okay? So what do these guys look like? Ribosomes, they are bound to membranes. So the ones that are bound to the membranes, they tend to make things that need to be inside some membrane. So, for example, if you have a hormone or something that you're going to release, you're going to want to make it inside the membrane. You don't want it to go everywhere and react everywhere and bound to every receptor. Right? So those are the membrane-bound ribosomes. There's also free ribosomes, and those are making proteins that are just for use anywhere in the cell, right? In this part of the cell called the cytoplasm, which is kind of everything around the cell. Basically. So the ribosomes that are outside there, you can also make kind of structural proteins, for example. You can make any other proteins that are just out there. Right? So those are the two main types of ribosomes. And what the ribosome actually looks like, it has a big unit and a small unit. And that's the easiest thing to remember, right? What's ribosome look like? They have a big thing and a little thing. That's all you have to know. And basically why you have a big and a little is because that RNA goes through between the big and the little. Okay. So, again, you don't have to know this detail. I'm just showing you for fun. Okay. So, so actually this is kind of before the ribosome. So first you have a DNA that needs to be transcribed into RNA. So this is before the ribosome. Sorry. This is before the ribosome. Once you have an RNA, then you're ready. So I'm not going to talk about this process. But once you have the RNA, it's almost ready for the ribosomal thing to come in and actually do its job, right? Before the RNA is ready to be used by the ribosome, though, it goes through a series of steps, okay? And basically, these are three different things that you need to do to the RNA to make it ready for the ribosome. And one thing is that it puts a certain cap on one end of it, and then it also puts in some extra bases on one tail. And then the other thing is that it actually cleaves a lot of useless things away. It turns out most of the DNA is actually useless because it's just useless bases that doesn't do anything. Why you have that? Because you have redundancy in the information. And evolution over time kind of accumulated a lot of useless stuff that you don't, you know, just think about your room, right? If you've been living there for a long time, you have a lot of things that are just lying around. And it turns out for the DNA is the same thing. You have lots of useless stuff sitting around that you don't need. And that whole thing gets transcribed into RNA. So RNA also has lots of useless things that you don't need. So first you get rid of those useless things and you make this like nice and succinct copy, right? The succinct copy now is the thing that is being read by the ribosome. So this is actually pretty important, so next time I'm going to pick up here. But once you have this processed RNA, right, going through the 5' cap, which put a little cap on there, puts a little tail in there, and the splicing, which is the thing that I said earlier about cutting out the useless pieces, that's called splicing. Once it goes through all that, once it's copied from the DNA, and it goes through all these processes, then it's ready. It gets transported outside the nucleus, or it gets transported inside the membrane somehow, if it's in a membrane-bound ribosome. But the ribosome now is ready to do its job as an organelle. It's going to go in, and I will talk about this process next time, it's going to go in and read off this code, which is in the RNA, originally from the DNA. It's going to read this off and figure out from the bases of the nucleic acids which amino acid it's going to be, and it translates this code into protein. This is the thing that kind of characterizes the cell. This is the thing, this is the big thing that makes everything possible to go from genetic information to the proteins that actually does the work in the cell. Okay? So anyway, looking forward to next time, and hope you